Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dr. Walter Dean for Getting It Done. We have been celebrating Black History now for the month of February, and I've chosen entertainers, and we have had the opportunity to listen to the great Miles Davis and his album that actually set smooth jazz and classical jazz into place. We listened to some other jazz guitarists like, some of the musicians that were so great, such as the saxophone player is Charlie Parker. And so I had to spend a whole period to talk about Charlie Parker, primarily because he was one of the leading, not only saxophone players, but one of the leading writers of the whole jazz bebop scene at the very beginning in the 1940s and late 1940s. And then, of course, Miles played along with him, and Dizzy Gillespie did all of them too. So today I'm going to be listening, you're going to be listening to an individual who never piano lessons in his life, was only 4'11", sat on telephone books when he played, and we're going to have somebody talk about how great this man was. I'm talking to you about none other than the great Earl Garner. So you want to learn how to play the piano, huh? Is the name of our show today. Let's give a listen.
Now then, back to Ernest McCarty. He was a bass player who worked with Earl Garner as accompanist for 5 years, maybe more. Somewhere in that period, Ernest and I met and have kept in touch. Now, he dropped by my office, as I said, recently, and we got into a conversation about Earl. And some of the things he said about Earl were so compelling that I decided to put it on film for you. You're going to see that film in a few moments, but don't think that all of this is just a selfish expression on my part. This interview is being presented out of the conviction that Earl Garner is among a whole host of exceptional people of our race who are little known by today's youth. We here at Like It Is are constantly seeking to remedy that, and this interview is a step in that direction.
After 10 happy years, here's something you deserve.
A diamond ring. Can we afford it?
You can afford the ultimate gift, diamond jewelry from SMA Diamond Importers. SMA has private showings by appointment only to help you choose from a vast selection of dazzling diamonds at unbelievably low importer prices. Call for your appointment.
I love my new diamond.
From SMA Diamond Importers.
HBO is okay, but only WHT is half the comedians and black cast films just made for you see. Plus, enjoy lots of great feature films, vintage screen classics, showbiz extravaganzas like Frank Sinatra in concert, touring specials and action-packed sports. No cable TV is required to get WHT. So why wait? Call toll-free Wayne and get some entertainment while the entertainment's hot. Operators are standing by.
This is Ernest McCarty today. For over 5 years, Ernest took his position on Earl Garner's left and accompanied one of the most demanding of musicians in concert and nightclub performances all over the world. Earl Lewis Garner. Oh, he was bad. He was just a shade taller than 5 feet, and yet he was unanimously regarded as a giant. We're fortunate to have acquired film of Garner in performance. Although you'll sing with another bassist accompanying him, he'll nonetheless, we hope, find the footage useful in understanding the brilliance that was his, and also aided by the illustrations drawn by Ernest McCarty in telling his story.
Thank you. Yeah,
and you just have to find it out.
Well, I've been playing that tune for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
horse happy, then we pick that instead of Westlife. I would have a problem with Westlife.
And so how many tunes did you all play?
We played, after that particular tune, the audition was actually over. Then we played, Misty. We started off in the traditional way. And round about the bridge, he went into a tango on top of Changing the Key, which is, if you play the song, you are a musician. The bridge to Misty starts on the fourth of the scale. That's the first chord after the turnaround.
That's right.
So therefore, if you're going to change key on top of it, you've got to find first thing about what key you're going to, and then get to fourth of the scale. So that solved a lot of problems for him as far as my musical ability was concerned, because he had to have someone who would be able to follow him all over the universe, musically speaking, so to speak.
So what key did you take it into?
We went from E-flat,
mm-hmm.
and we went from E-flat to G-flat.
Right.
Which means that on the turnaround, we used a F-sharp 7 or G-flat 7 going to a B major 7 or a C-flat major 7. Instead of an A-flat major 7. It was interesting.
He didn't say anything to you, he just did it.
He just did it. Spontaneous. Head arrangements, which is the type of format we always used whenever we travel, whenever we recorded, even on the album. It even says it. Head arrangements by Errol Garner. He didn't rehearse.
And you never had a rehearsal since?
No rehearsals. Except when we got ready to do a television show, we just set up, you know, sound check, that kind of thing. That's not a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get the balance.
So we ran into time where whatever he played, you just have to be ready.
At all times.
How many tunes did you say this man knew?
You know, in Errol's case, it would be almost like saying how many stars are in the sky. Errol could play anything that he never heard. So therefore, there was no telling how many songs he actually knew. Because he could play along with the music, something would be playing up there, and he would sound just like it. He knew classical music. He could do Beethoven. He could do rock. He could imitate anybody's style. He was a most noted musician. He was a very deep professor of another method of doing music to people. He didn't know about harmony, how to put it together, how to write it down. He couldn't expound on the principles and elements that comprise music. But let him get to a piano. That's the office. To these companies, the world, like going to the mountains, talk to the Maharishi. That's where his music was received.
Did he ever take a tune into such a way or start playing in such a way that you just had to sort of lay out and see what he was going to do before you caught up?
Yeah, I must admit now, in my wanderings around the musical with this man, there was a couple of times when I was totally lost. I mean, he's on Jupiter, and I'm over here on Mars someplace, and I had to just stand there, right on the stage, and just get myself together. And he covered. And he covered, because usually the other two musicians, the drummer and the cooler, would take their cue from me when we would come in, because he would cue me, because I have to do the chords as well at the time. So if I didn't play, chances are they wouldn't play either. And I was counting on that. Because if they had played, and he was playing, there I was. Egg on my face, man, raw egg too. He played that song, he played an intro that was so magnificent that I couldn't even zoom in on what tune that he had disguised with an intro.
¶¶
let you down was on the bandstand. So he wasn't going to warn you. He wasn't going to hang you up so that the audience knows. He was going to send you some musical messages as to, you know, I am still the guy, and I'm giant, and I know what's going on before you know what's going on. So what he would do, do a nice intro, start playing one particular tune. Thank you. songs that are usually shown by a lot of musicians because of chord changes. He would play a song like that out. He could move it backward. He could play the one in one hand and loop on the other, and you got all these things coming at the same time. He could destroy the harmonic or tonal center in your mind and make you doubt. The key was in him playing it. And one lyric that you played, this does not sound like it's true. This was not, and it's not all it is. He made magic. He made magic.
Didn't have the linguistic capabilities. Could he make himself as understood verbally as he could as a piano?
He wanted to. He had magnificent verbiage when he wanted to. He could talk as eloquently as anyone if he wanted to. But he preferred to talk in code. Even the name that we called him by, Uchiku, is a name that signifies an image more so than a thing. And that's why they call him Uchiku, man. He was Uchiku. I mean, that's how he knew Uchiku. Whatever Uchiku is, that's what Errol was. He could talk to you through the piano, also. He was multilingual as far as that. He could talk several other languages through the piano.
Could he do it, brother? Could he make himself?
No. Errol had his own language. There was that thing to be understood everywhere. I'm going to quote something. We're going to be sitting out there in the cafe, and we're trying to get some refreshment, make some coffee, ham and cheese sandwich, or whatever it is. And it's the group, Errol, and the stage manager, the road manager, we're all sitting there. And the waiter's coming over. And he's going through his thing. And we got our books out, you know, talking very fluent Italian, pizza, salami, bologna, zucchini, you know, very good Italian. You don't understand a thing. Errol says to the man, which of course, pickle in the pig foot. Pickle in the pig foot. Man brings beer, sardines, bread, pie. You know what I'm saying? Now, I know people want to say, you're lying. I don't care. What did you ask for again?
Pickle in the pig foot.
What he got, what he wanted, and we got what we wanted. He comes in, man, and everything comes out, man.
He would talk to you on the set while he was playing?
Yeah. Sometimes about things that are totally unrelated to what was going on at that particular moment. You know, the one number he would turn over and say, I saw you last night. Speaking out the hotel.
Well,
you could have knocked on my door.
Stuff like that, you know.
Ding-a-ling.
Boom, boom. What you saying, boom, 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 boom?
Ding-a-ling. I do ask questions, and I did ask him, why do you say ding-a-ling? I don't agree with the other things, because if he was putting more like five again. So he said, well, on one of the few occasions that he was talking standard English to me, that you know, on the game shows, and you get something, they ring the bell on you. So when people get something, I ring the bell on them. You know?
So that's a compliment, actually.
Or if it's not a compliment, or I caught you, then you know? It's an inflection.
What was it like on tour with him? Tell us about the way in which crowds overseas responded to him.
I never understood it in the first place because when I grew up in Chicago, people talked about show business as a frivolous situation. The girls have to wear the wings and then dream, and the guys are like, hey, talking to stuff and everything like you do on dancing and shuffling. What jazz musicians were when they played in jam sessions in little clubs. They didn't talk. They got up there and they played and dealt with that and they worked at it. Earl would come out, and after the first two, you would think you were at a party. And people would start ordering drinks again, if it were a cabaret situation, or if it were a concert, you would leave, go to the bathroom. When the break would come, everybody would just and we almost running over each other, getting back to their seats. Some people were fighting over, this was my seat. No, it wasn't. I was sitting here. See, my coat is here. People have switched seats while people were leaving to get closer to this man. One lady came and told me, I just want to look at you. Just want to just look at you. I mean, I always knew what this.
You thought she knew how great a gift he had been given.
Uh-huh. Which is one of the reasons I think I found him to be bored a lot. So once you know that something is the way it is, if you talk, I mean, to whom do you talk? People tell you he's got an ego, he's got a problem, but he thinks he's wonderful. He has to tell somebody about this gift that I'm sure at certain times he didn't view it as a gift. Because he cut into his private life. He couldn't be the artist. When someone recognized him, he would have to become the media thing and go through that ritual of signing autographs and being a so-and-so. But when he played, he regressed. To the age of 4 or 5, he played, not being concerned with being perhaps being run over traffic, or if not, the gig is going to get paid, or if the second show is going to be filled. And he played, that was not all that was going on. And he played, we were glad to be there.
Practice and work maybe two steps a night, hour set.
if it were an hour. So he had a lot of time on his hands to think about the powers that he had, the tips that he had, the people that he had on him, the people that he was, the family that he was supporting, all of the business interests that people had in him. He drank. It never got in the way of his playing, nothing like that. Not that I could see. I think what it did, was deteriorate his health, which might have been turned weak at him to affect his playing.
But as he went up on the bandstand and he had a few under his belt, how could it not affect him? Or what would happen to him when he sat down?
Let's talk about the effects of alcohol upon the body. It brings it down and is a depressant. If he began to play a set and he was thinking about playing it one way, the alcohol in the system would bring it down to a level that would probably relate to most people. Which is probably why he could touch a lot of people. Because he would begin a set very, very lofty. As the set would go on, he would get more and more dirty. The songs he would start making up on the piano were in the tones of brothels and stuff.
Mm.
You could almost sing his music, the things that Errol did. If you listen beyond, I had the opportunity because I heard so much that I got over the awe of the sound of his playing and started understanding what was being played on a particular song, how he felt. And when he was depressed, you could tell that in his playing. And such beautiful melodies would come out when he's depressed. And it was almost as if he were wishing he was something else.
You said that this was the baddest piano player you have ever heard. What made him superior to other artists like a Tatum or a Peterson or somebody of that caliber?
Well, I don't want to put anybody on the spot or compare anyone. I'm just going to point out the things that Earl did that the others did not do.
And what was that?
He improvised upon improvisation. I don't know if I can even explain that. But whenever you went to an Earl Garner concert, which people you would follow him around the country, couples would drive 300-400 miles within. Even if you heard a song that he had recorded and you came that night to hear it and you requested it and he said that he would play it, I hope you didn't count on hearing it the same way it was recorded. So he was going to take that as a base and he was going to go wherever the muse is going to take him at that particular time and you're going with him.
stop there for 1 minute. Hallelujah. Earl Garner, what a fantastic musician. What a fantastic piano player. Let's find out a little bit more about him. What we're going to do is we're going to talk about him as a legend. Let's listen.
How to get super fast Wi-Fi anywhere, anytime in 6 seconds. Internet providers don't want you to know about this.
Today on Jazz Legends, a self-taught virtuoso who won the hearts of audiences the world over with his all-encompassing piano style, the immortal Earl Garner. Recorded in 1951 with John Simmons' bass and Shadow Wilson drums. Earl Garner was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in June 1921. His older brother Linton was a pianist, and from an early age, Earl too showed an aptitude for the instrument. In a few years, Garner was already performing publicly on radio with the Candy Kids Entertainers. He received some instruction at the piano, but was primarily self-taught, never learning to read music. By the time Earl reached his teens, he was working with various local bands, most notably saxophonist Leroy Brown from 38 to 41. Garner then started to work solo and in duets with both singers and instrumentalists. He moved to New York in 44 and started to work the night spots, eventually hooking up with bassist Slam Stewart and guitarist Tiny Grimes to sub for Art Tatum in the pianist's trio. Big shoes to fill, but Garner had already studied the work of Tatum, in addition to Fats Waller and fellow Pittsburghian Earl Hines, and was well on the way to establishing his own conception. Here's a rare feast of early Garner with an all-star band that includes Slam Stewart, Vic Dickinson on trombone, Charlie Shaver's trumpet, and towards the end, Len Davis on alto. This is Meatless Payday. Thank you.
Jazz group that he played with back in 1943, before actually anybody had ever really heard of the real beautiful style that he was able to present. I place Earl Garner as one of the top three jazz pianists of all time, along with Oscar Peterson and Art Tatum. And I think I'd hate to leave you as an audience listening to something he did in 1943. Let's see if we can catch, before the end of this program, something that he did later on that shows his change in unique style.
Garner continued to work with Sloan Stewart in a trio setting, with drummer Howard West laying the roots for Garner's subsequent work in this format. Here's a recording from January 45 with Eddie Brown replacing Stewart on bass. This is Moving Around.
His style began to change. Let's move on ahead to later on, the style that we finally got to recognize.
By 1958, Garner was touring internationally and made his first trip to Paris, which was to become a second home for the pianist. The trio found a highly receptive audience in Europe, and in 1963 they were recorded by the BBC for Jazz 625. This is a swinging version of Mother, with a typically free-spirited introduction from Garner.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully you enjoyed our presentation on Earl Garner. This has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean. So I hope to bring you later this week on Friday another tale in Black history and the mastery of magic done in music, and hopefully you will have an opportunity to listen to that. Have a good week.